This podcast is a copyrighted production of Radio America and is not intended for broadcast. Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is brought to you by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Berry.
And on this beautiful day, it's always a pleasure to be with you wherever you happen to be in these United States or across the world, what military base you may be, wherever you are, the military bases across around the world, land and sea. We pride ourselves in being one of the few shows that's elected to broadcast to our military members around the world. And also to our various stations throughout the Radio America network. It's always a pleasure. And we hope that you find the topic of financial literacy finally interesting enough to listen to and to care about, because it really gets down to whether or not you are financially fit. That's the purpose of this program. And we break it down. We break it down so that you can understand it. You don't have to have a degree in economics to understand what we're talking about and make decisions that can affect your home, your family, and your future. And certainly, we all want to be in a position to do what's right there. I am very happy today because I have a chance to speak with someone who I dearly care about. That's my son. But he's not here as a contributing producer, nor is he here doing social media. He is here as a, if you will, as an economist, as one who has a keen interest in the economies of scale as they relate to our pocketbooks. Tally was into Washington, D.C. last week to attend an interesting conference. It's it's called a Rethinking Macroeconomic Policy 3, Progress or Confusion. Now, that's confusing to me and maybe to you, but it's not to Tally. He will break it down and tell us why we should be interested. After we finish with the Tally interviews, we will then turn to another very interesting topic. Who do you think is the best investor, a male or female? Well, there's an interesting study out that says females and women are better investors than we are, guys. You believe it? Well, we'll talk with someone who knows about the study and who will share with us why that is true, why, based on behaviors and the thought processes, et cetera, that women are better investors. But first, let's get to this issue. As I said earlier this week, a financial conference was held in D.C. The conference called, as I told you, the Rethinking Macroeconomic Policy 3, Progress or Confusion, was held right here at the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Its importance was defined by those who were in attendance and those who made up the panel of experts. Among those in attendance was Tally Berry, is going to join us to talk about the importance of financial literacy as it relates to our young people here in the U.S. and worldwide. We invited Tally to join us from Thailand this morning to talk about the conference and what was discussed as it relates to the impact on your financial future. Tally, welcome to Home and Family Finance, all the way from Bangkok, Thailand.
Thank you. So great to be back on the program.
It's great to hear you back on the program, and I must say you traveled over 10,000 miles to attend this conference, so you must have thought that, and of course to see us, but you must have thought this was a very important conference. Tell us why it was so important and why we should care about it.
Well, the title of the conference lets you know the importance right away. This wasn't rethinking some small particular corner of macroeconomic policy. This was rethinking the entire field. And the reason so many leading economists feel we have to do this is because we were blindsided in 2007, 2008 by the global financial crisis, which everyone, private citizens, huge countries, felt the effects from. So what the conference really is, it was held April 15th and 16th this year, was a chance for economists to come back and discuss the progress they've made, the new directions we're taking the field, to try to prevent that from happening again. And this is the third conference. This is a Macroeconomic Policy 3, The first two were in 2011 and 2013. And again, their responses to the crisis in 2007-2008.
And let me share with the audience before you continue as to when we talk about a panel of important people, we are seriously talking about folks like Ben Bernanke, who Federal Reserve Chair, former Chair, Larry Summers, Secretary of the Treasury. We're talking about Paul Volcker, Federal Reserve Chairman. We're talking about Robert Rubin, Secretary of the Treasury, and tons of other big-name people who have had an important say in what happens. You were there, Tali. Tell us what the takeaway from your point of view is.
Well, that's a difficult question. I'll point your attention to the subtitle of the conference, which is Progress or Confusion? Question mark. The organizer of the conference was Olivier Blanchard, the head economist of the IMF. He wanted to call it Rethinking Macroeconomic Policy 3, Down in the Trenches. So to give the idea that, you know, we're working past the problems we've had, trying to figure out what the right solutions are in the future. But Larry Summers, who you mentioned, wouldn't sign on as a co-organizer of the conference with the title there because he didn't feel it accurately represented how well, or really how poorly, the field is understood at the moment. So the title Progress or Confusion suggests that there are all kinds of different views, and that's why it's such an important time for people to pay attention to what's going on here. The takeaway for me was that there's still a lot of work to do, and it's hard to know in what direction macroeconomic policy is going to go.
We're talking with Tali Berry, who attended this tremendous conference here in Washington this past week or so. When we come back, he's going to tell us why you should care about what happens and why and how the decisions that are made there will impact your pocketbook. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be a part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Or maybe just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And we're talking with Tali Berry, who attended a conference here last month. In Washington, D.C. The conference would seem to have little immediate bearing on private citizens' wallets. But from Tali's point of view, what happened there, it should be of interest to you because they're talking about macroeconomics. What is macro? What does this mean? Tali, bring us up to speed on this.
Yeah, when we talk about macro, we're talking about monetary policy. Everyone's more familiar with fiscal policy. That's what the government spends and what the government taxes. Monetary policy is trying to control how much money there is in the economy. So when we have slumps like we started to have in 2007-2008, it can be useful to pump a lot of money into the economy to get people spending again because people are trying too hard to save. They're worried about the future. And this side of it is what's slightly less well understood by people. There's also a third segment here. We talked about fiscal policy, monetary policy. There's this new kid on the block, macroprudential policy. It sounds scary and technical, but what it really means is rules on private citizens to try to protect against dangerous habits that could affect the whole system. So that is really the place where you may see an impact on your own pocketbook in the future.
And the impact that you're likely to see is going to be controlled by whom and in what way?
Yeah, that's a great question. As far as monetary policy goes, you're talking about the Federal Reserve. You hear a lot in the news about the Federal Reserve, but maybe none of it's really understandable. Sometimes you hear about the interest rate, the lending rate that they offer. And that's the amount of money you get when you put your money into a bank, essentially. So if that number is very low, it's probably better for investments because more people will want to spend money than put it in a bank. But it's not as good for, say, the elderly who have most of their money in a bank and are maybe living off their interest. So it affects different people in different ways.
From what you learned there, had I been at that conference, and I'm saying Paul as the average American, Was this designed for me to understand and to hear? And what would I have been able to learn, or should I have known about or learned about while listening to what these men of great finance know?
Yeah, that's the problem with this kind of thing, is that it has a huge, huge bearing on the everyday lives of Americans and of people around the world. But not many people can really understand it because of the way it's talked about, and also because it's not well publicized what goes on with the Fed. A lot of decisions are made, that's with the Federal Reserve, are made behind closed doors. There was an interesting quote from Jill Marcus, who is the head of the South African Reserve Bank, their version of the Federal Reserve, that 55% of South Africans don't even know there is a Reserve Bank that controls the amount of money and tries to control interest rates and things like that. So I think it is important that people understand what these policies are affecting them, how these policies are affecting them. But it can be very difficult, yes, I think so.
And I agree with you. I think it can be difficult. And so the question then becomes is, are we better off for what we don't know, or are we losing ground because we're not involved? I'm talking about average citizen.
Yeah, I think we are losing ground because we're not involved. These are very, very important decisions that are being made, and some of them can really work against the decisions we think we're making in other directions. And in the future, I think it'll even become more important because we're talking about these macroprudential tools I was mentioning. We'll see in the future probably limits on the loans you can get relative to the value of your house. We remember that the housing bubble was one of the big reasons the economy collapsed back in 2007, 2008. So if that's something that's important to you, being able to buy a more expensive house because you can get a bigger loan versus the safety of smaller loans, then that's something you might want to have an interest in influencing with your elected officials.
We're talking with Tali Berry from Bangkok, Thailand. He was in Washington, D.C. for this recent conference that really has and will have an impact on where we move ahead globally. And that's the issue when we come back we're talking about. We are now looking at this as a from a global perspective. Men and women from all over the world were in for this conference. Is that a good thing? We'll ask Tali that question when we come back. Listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. I am your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsors the Defense Credit Union Council and the Credit Union National Association, and we thank them for the continued support of this program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of military SAVES in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops who are out there protecting us. Military SAVES is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military SAVES acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can better serve themselves, better learn money management skills, and they can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military SAVES, set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And whether you're in the military or not, folks, all of us should be saving. And saving is what we're talking about right now. Saving in a way that makes our personal income streams serve our needs. And then on a bigger scale is a conference that you didn't even know was going on last month in Washington, D.C. It brought all of the heavy hitters from around the world together to discuss what they call macroeconomics. Where are we in terms of our economies? And we're talking with Tali Berry, who attended this conference. He's back now in Bangkok, Thailand. He joined us from there, and he was in the midst of this. Tali, were you surprised that there's such a global approach to our economies of scale about what happens in our financial markets worldwide? Is this something new or has this been going on for some time?
I don't think we should be surprised at this point. One of the biggest takeaways from the conference was that we can't look at macroeconomic issues from a national perspective anymore. Financial markets are all connected. Currency flows and exchange rates mean that what one country does to try to control their money supply can have a big impact on other countries. In fact, Dr. Raghuram Rajan, the Reserve Bank of India governor, mentioned that there may be a pattern to the fact that there was a big advanced economies crash in the 80s and then emerging markets crash in the 90s, especially in Asia. Then a big crash in the advanced economies in the 2000s, and maybe we'll see a crash in the emerging markets in the 2010s. So it's clear that it is something that must be paid attention to with a global perspective.
And why should we care, Tally? Why should I at home in Iowa or Washington State or Florida, why should I care about this conference and what was going on and what was said there?
Yeah, from the global perspective, the thing we usually think about is the exchange rate. What's how many euros or how many pounds or how many Thai baht does a U.S. dollar buy? And that has a couple important effects for everyday citizens. First, of course, if the dollar gets stronger, you might have more opportunities for travel. You know, you can take that vacation to Paris you've been looking forward to for years.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of that is that as the dollar gets stronger, it's more expensive to buy American products. And that's where you see jobs lost overseas. When the dollar gets too strong and it becomes more effective or cheaper to buy goods made in other markets than in the U.S. So that you can get the increased availability of travel and better prices, but the jobs lost is the trade-off there.
Did these men act like they care about kids, about young people, and what they know or don't know about the financial markets worldwide?
Yeah, they absolutely do. They absolutely do. And that is one of the most interesting things about the field, is that they talk about, you know, highly technical subjects in math. It looks like just scribbling on the board. But most of these men are driven by, and women, are driven by the opportunity to help people in countries affected by crisis or in countries that could just do with better normal times macroeconomic policy. In fact, Dr. Rajan of India, who I mentioned, he says when he was young, his parents couldn't afford a blazer for him if he wanted to go to a formal event. And so under his guidance are the billion-plus people in India who rely on his making the right decisions. The results of macroeconomic decisions are massive.
Unbelievable. Tally, thank you. I mean, again, we are doing what no one else is doing, talking about an issue that everybody should know about. Thank you for going to the conference, and thank you for sharing with us. And thank you for coming to us all the way from Bangkok, Thailand. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay.
All right, son. When we come back, we're going to talk about women being better investors than men. That ought to stir you up just a bit. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Barry.
You're listening to a podcast from the Radio America Network. Find more podcasts of your favorite shows at radioamerica.org. Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Barry.
And we continue, as we do each week on this program, telling you issues, telling you, giving you answers, or helping you think through some issues that may have a positive impact on your bottom line, whether it be your home, your family, or your finances. That's the purpose of the show. Financially fit. Are you that way? And how do you get that way? One of the ways you get that way is by doing some great investing, folks. Saving, of course, is right at the top of our list. Investing is very close. So who is the better investor? Is it a man or a woman? Well, believe it or not, according to financial expert Meredith Jones, women outperform men. Now, this sounds like a call to battle, folks. Her new book, Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and how you can too. And we invited financial expert Meredith Jones to join us to explore a little bit more in depth the research that she is revealing in her book. Let me first say to you, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, Meredith. And after that, we're going to fight for the rest of these 15 minutes or so, because I don't believe this is true. It's not possible. It couldn't be that women are better invested. Where did you get these facts and figures, ma'am?
Well, there's a growing body of research that shows that women and men simply invest differently. They approach the markets differently. They approach things like risk differently. And those differentiated behaviors have an impact on returns. And so we have seen in retail investors, we've seen in professional money managers, that women can and do produce superior investment returns.
Amazing. Amazing. So this is not just something that you think. This is something that the research shows is absolutely true.
At this point, there are a multitude of studies, and the number of studies are growing. And while sometimes I know people take issue with academics in this case, I can say for sure that I have seen it in practice as well.
Well, that's an interesting thing. And let me ask this question, because it came to my mind, is that over the years, the market, quote unquote, as we know it, was developed by men. And not that I'm saying that's a good thing. I think it's just a true thing, is that historically, men were doing this, men were doing that. Women come into a situation that was originally developed by men, and they see it from a different perspective. Could that be the reason that women have a better result than their male counterparts?
Well, I would say that actually the market was certainly developed and dominated by men historically, and really that hasn't changed very much. Even today, we're looking at only about 5% of the people that are taking risk with capital on Wall Street being women. So the numbers are still incredibly low. But I think a lot of what impacts the performance for these women and for men is how they interact with the markets from a standpoint of risk-reward ratios, sticking to a strategy, and how they deal with market stress.
And that difference is inherent. Is it learned? What causes that difference in terms of the approach to the marketplace, Meredith? Any idea?
Well, there's really three factors. So the first factor is biological. The way that hormones, which we know are different between men and women, the way that those interact together. So, for example, how testosterone, which men have 90% more testosterone than women, how that interacts with the stress hormone cortisol. That will impact risk-taking. That will impact how people approach investing. In addition, there's also brain structure differences. So men, for example, have a much bigger amygdala, which is the part of the brain that impacts fight-or-flight response. So again, how stress impacts markets and investment behavior. And so what you tend to see is, particularly in a bad market environment, women and men are going to have markedly different reactions based in part on that biology. You also have cognitive factors, so how people think about and process information, and that can be anything from overconfidence to probability weighting scales. And then finally, those two things combine to create differentiated market behavior. So, for example, because men tend to be more overconfident, they also trade more often than women do. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that over time, we all know that overtrading can erode returns, and so men are more prone to behaviors like that.
Wow. So this is truly, I mean, this is not just something we think about. This is something that you've researched, something that has been proven based on the differences between men and women, the philosophical, psychological, and biological differences that all come to bear to make to point out that there are different reactions to the same situation.
There is definitely, again, women process the information that they take in from the markets differently, and then they act on it very differently as well.
I note there's a number of things that, and thank you, by the way, for for supplying us with some thoughts about this, because some of this I would never have thought about, but I think it's right, because there's one. What does it mean to maintain conviction? Are we talking about not trading so quickly that men are more likely to trade faster? Is that what you mean by maintaining conviction?
It absolutely is. So what you have seen in some of the research is that women are less likely to sell off a position just because the market as a whole is trending down, for example. So they're better able to separate out what is market noise from what is actually a bad investment. And so as a result, they tend to produce better returns because they're not, again, flipping their positions quite as often and based on things that may have nothing to do with the soundness of the investment.
Mm-hmm. My guest is financial expert Meredith Jones. Her book, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and How You Can Too. Is there resistance from, let me stop, because I'm going to my next question, I think, is so important about whether or not men agree with this and whether there is resistance to bringing women in to exercise these judgments. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry.
We want you to be a part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Or maybe just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is a financial expert, Meredith Jones. Her book, Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and How You Can Too. And she'll tell us where you can get her book and find the book in just a minute. But what is happening here in her book is that she has done the research that shows that women, because of the nature, because of their habits, because of their thinking, because of how they are convicted to certain things, end up being better money managers. So assuming that that is true, is there resistance, Meredith, on behalf of men to elevate women to positions because they, I won't say they're smarter, they just outthink men in investing?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's necessarily resistance. I have talked, actually, interestingly enough, with a number of men who are investors who, when I tell them the premise of the book, they have said, you know, I knew it all along, which I find utterly
fascinating. Yes, that is fascinating.
I know male investors, for example, who have staffed their investment professionals with women so that those women can balance out and mitigate their bad habits of the men and amplify the good habits of the women. So certainly there is a growing realization that this could be a very profitable thing to have more women engaging with the financial markets. And I think that over time we'll continue to see that. The only time I tend to get a little bit of pushback is when people want to know whether or not I am advocating switching all of your investments from men to women. And I think that does tend to, perhaps make people a little saltier. But actually, I'm not advocating that. What I am advocating is if you want to have a truly diversified portfolio, you can't get away from the fact that behavior is going to impact your investments, whether it's your behavior or your money manager's behavior or even macroeconomic behavior. And so what you want to do is have a mix of behaviors at work so that you're not completely in one camp or the other.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say macroeconomics, because we were just talking about that with my first guest. He was at the conference here at the World Bank, International Monetary Fund. And, of course, their topic was macroeconomics, where are we? And all of that kind of plays into the role of saying you have to understand economics and what makes us do what we do, which including saying would we be better off if we had more women at the top of the investment world? Do you think that would benefit us?
I absolutely do. There's been some research that actually shows, specifically from a macroeconomic perspective, that if there were more women taking risk with capital in the market, that we would actually have fewer market bubbles, which of course would be beneficial to anybody who has money in the stock market.
You know what? I'm going to say this because I can hear it right now, Meredith. There are folks listening. These are bold statements. I mean, wait a minute here. Is there enough research to really show that, you know, we'd have fewer bubbles, or if women were, or is this a book written by a woman about women that's just simply touting what they can do without any research? I tend to think you have the research, but not everybody would agree with that, would they?
Well, I think that people can take issue with just about anything. But at the end of the day, I'm not a female money manager, so I really don't have a dog in the hunt. I'm really just trying to find out the best way for people to invest money. And there is research that shows that, I think I mentioned earlier in the show, that there are differences in how men and women weigh probabilities.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So one of those things that happens is that men tend to have a much more curved probability scale, while women's probability weighting is much flatter. And what that means is that women tend to provide lower estimates for price targets. And those lower estimates for price targets can mean that they tend to inflate prices less, which then, of course, results in less boom and bust. Mm-hmm. Period.
Mm-hmm. You also, you're interesting too. You talk about the rule-based investing. A number of strategies, when we talk about some, were common to many of the women you interviewed. One of these is rule-based investing. Now, what is rule-based investing, and why is it effective?
You know, and that's something that's effective no matter what your gender. So rule-based investing means that you have very strict criteria that you adhere to when you're investing. And that can be something like a stop loss, for example. If a position loses more than X percent, then you exit that mm-hmm. investment.
Right.
It can be maximum concentration limits, that you won't put more than 5% or 10% in any particular investment. And one of the things that happens when you have those kind of discipline-based investment strategies is that you don't let your emotions run away with you when it comes to an investment. You don't fall in love with it and decide and, you know, and write it down to the bottom. You don't buy so much of it that it becomes an enormous risk within your portfolio. And again, because of the way that women tend to interact with the market, they tend to be less emotional when it comes to investing as well, but they also tend to have these rules in place. But like I said, the rules can benefit you no matter what your gender. They can help you make smarter decisions.
We're talking with financial expert and author Meredith Jones. Her book, Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and How You Can Too. By the way, just so that those who are listening, Jones's research has been covered in The Economist, The New York Times, CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, and The Financial Times, among others. She is not she is respected in terms of what she is saying, what she's written about, and the research that she has done. And I imagine that there are women out there that are hearing this who are saying, okay, this is good. Tell me how I can move up the ranks in money management. When we come back, I'll have her explain to us, from her perspective, what women need to do, not only to move up, but to move up in a way that is not harmful to getting to the or cracking that glass ceiling. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Family Finance. I am your host, Paul Berry, and we are very pleased to have with us a financial expert, Meredith Jones. Her new book is Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and How You Can Too. And we are very pleased to have her with us. I was asking the question, and I think it's a question that's worthy of your response, is women saying, okay, you've proven to me that, yeah, I have the strength and capability of doing this, but how do I move to the top without hurting myself? Because I'm moving based on my gender, not discounting my knowledge and everything else, but gender is a part of this.
Well, and I think the interesting thing about this book is that the number one thing that it's done for a lot of the people that I've talked to is convince them that as a woman, the approach they're taking, while different, isn't wrong. When I first got into the money management business back in 1998, it was not until 2007 that I met a woman who had a job similar to mine. And so I spent a lot of time wondering if the way that I approached the markets was wrong up until that point in time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's very liberating for women to know that even though they have a different approach, that that approach can be very profitable and can be a good thing. Now, as far as getting to the top and how this can be used to break the glass ceiling, so to speak, you know, I think it's an interesting concept because we're not actually talking about doing this from a gender perspective. You're not hiring women because it's the right thing to do. You're bringing more women into finance because they can make you more money. And that is the very fundamental basis for most investment and certainly for Wall Street.
It's so a very compelling reason.
It's not a sexist thing. It's a capitalist thing.
It's a very compelling reason, isn't it? You say, look, you want to make more money? Here's what you should do. And that's another point we ought to talk about. You're not saying do this to the detriment of men. You're saying if we're in the business to make money and to be successful, you're doing this because it's a positive thing that works.
That's correct. You know, you wouldn't walk past a $20 bill on the ground and think, you know, I'm not going to stop and pick this up. I feel like what's been happening is that the markets have really not acknowledged that there is a sustainable competitive advantage that women may bring to the table that, again, will be profitable for everybody. And the market needs to recognize that and make the adjustments so that we can all profit from women and women's inherent investment talent.
And you say in the Women of the Street, you say that an increasing number of institutional investors like pensions, endowments, and foundations now have mandates for women-owned or managed funds. Do you think that's going to increase?
I do think that's going to increase. When you think about where people generate returns, they tend to generate them either from strategy, so the investment strategies that they're investing in. They generate them through manager skill, and then unfortunately they also sometimes generate returns through luck, which is sometimes difficult to separate from skill. But one of the things that they haven't really embraced fully yet is that there are returns that can be generated based on behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I think we'll see more institutions looking to maximize their returns by using that heretofore unused arrow in their quiver, that behavioral alpha that they can mm-hmm. get from investing with people who interact with the markets differently.
All right. Well, here's a loaded question. Do you advocate investing only in women-owned or managed funds?
Absolutely not. Basically, what that would do would be to take the behaviors and flip them from one pole to the other. I think you need a diversified portfolio, and part of that diversification is diversification of behavior. And you can't have diversified behavior when you only invest with one gender.
But I have the right to suggest to someone who wants my money, I can ask the question, do you have women working here at high-level decision-making positions? That's okay to do, right?
Absolutely. And we're starting to see more of that they want to know that there are, again, a balance of people who can amplify the good behaviors and mitigate the bad behaviors.
Where can your book be found, Ms. Meredith?
It can be found on Amazon, on BarnesandNoble.com, and wherever you like to buy books.
How's it doing, by the way?
I think pretty well. It only came out pretty recently, but we've had good sales so far.
I like you. Liked having you on the show. Want to have you come back and talk about this a little bit later, and let's have a discussion. I'd like to do it with maybe some other folks on the panel just to talk about it so we can balance it as well, okay?
That sounds great.
It sounds great. It does indeed. You've been great. Thanks for being with us. Meredith Jones, a book, Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and How You Can Too. I hope we've generated some interest in you and that you go out and do the right thing, do the smart thing. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. My thanks to Al Peterson, to Tally Berry, and more especially to you for joining us. Doesn't work without you being here. I'll be here next week. Hope to see you then.